Islam, worship, feminism, pietism, postmodernism. You can meet and hear Issues Etc. regular guests discussing these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Registration is $100 per person. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14 and 15 in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org. It's a revolution. When you just say evolution, it sounds rather stark. There's a modifier that many Christians are more comfortable with using the term evolution. It's theistic evolution. Now, it's a little adjective that makes it sound like God has a part in evolution. Maybe it's a little bit of both. And I think a lot of Christians opt for that for, maybe just not to be embarrassed by what they think is the preponderance of scientific evidence in favor of Darwinian evolution. But is theistic evolution a contradiction in terms? Joining us to talk about theistic evolution, is it theistic? Is it evolution? Greg Kokel, founder and president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, author of the book Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Convictions. He's also written an article for the latest Solid Ground newsletter, Drifting Toward Darwinism. Greg, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to talk to you, Todd. Thanks.
How do you explain, we got a few minutes here before we take our first break, how do you explain the movement of some very prominent Christian thinkers toward agreement with evolution?
Well, I think there are two impulses that inform that, Todd. The first is fidelity to Scripture and Christian orthodoxy. I mean, these are solid Christian thinkers. They believe in the Bible. They believe in the orthodox doctrines of Christianity. But at the same time, there is a growing conviction that they have that the evidence for Darwinism is so overwhelming that Christians have to accommodate it for the gospel to be credible. So that what they want to do is they want to make peace with the reigning paradigm of Darwinism and still maintain a meaningful hold on Orthodox Christian religion. So by and large, these theistic evolutionists, at least the ones that I'm most concerned about now, are solid people, have had a significant position in the evangelical community, but are being persuaded that the Darwinian model, and we'll talk specifically about what that means in a few moments, but are being persuaded that the Darwinian model is true, and if we deny that, we are going to be viewed as flat earthers to the rest of the scientific establishment, and the gospel will not be considered credible to them. And this is why they are tempted, I think, towards this theistic evolution option.
So with only about 30 seconds here, it sounds as though they are well-intentioned.
Yes.
But in only a nutshell here, can they pull it off? Can that really be done?
Well, it depends on the meaning of two words, theistic and evolution. There are some ways of defining those words where the words seem to go together properly. There are other ways of defining those words where it seems that they cannot fit together. And so the real question is, what is the theism that we're trying to hold on to, and what is the evolution we are trying to marry to it? That's the key.
All right, we'll get a definition for both of those terms. Really, if we're going to say, all right, here's the scientific community, we want to reach them, we want some credibility with them, they want evolution. Let's figure out what they mean by evolution. What do they mean by Darwinian evolution? Not what we want it to mean, not what we hope it would mean, but what the scientific community says it really does mean. And can that then be joined with theism? We'll answer that question with Greg Kokel on the other side of the break.
How would you like to attend a conference and hear Rod Rosenblatt, Will Wheaton, Chris Roseborough, Al Schmidt, Suzanne Vinker, and Todd Wilkin? You're invited to the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois. Registration is $100 per person. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 14th and 15th in Collinsville, Illinois. issuesetc.org.
Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The Virtual Organist Service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Pastor Todd, I downloaded your Issues, Etc. app for my Android phone, and I listen to it while I'm on the treadmill.
You can listen to Issues, Etc. live or on demand with the new Issues, Etc. Android or iPhone app. You can download these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. in the palm of your hand. Download an app today.
My new Adam really enjoys the app while I'm on the treadmill.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Groups that enjoy being politically correct really get mad when somebody speaks the truth to them. Ryan Baumberger is black, was conceived in rape, and is adopted. He and his wife have adopted children, and he's outspoken against abortion. Ryan's speaking out against the pro-abortion stand of the NAACP, which stands for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Ryan says it really stands for the National Association for the Abortion of Colored People, since the abortion industry clearly targets the black population. This made the civil rights group really mad, and they threatened to sue Ryan. Ryan says it's ironic a black man's being sued by the nation's oldest civil rights group for exercising his most basic civil right, the freedom of speech. I'll keep you posted.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. On this Wednesday afternoon, the 6th of March, we're talking with Greg Kokel of Stand to Reason. Is theistic evolution theistic? Is it evolution? Now, before the break, Greg, you said it depends on how we define those two very important terms. Let's start with the word evolution. Give us a little history of that word.
Well, you know, the word evolution itself has evolved over time into a variety of permutations. It started with Darwin first, looking at some natural agent of change in the environment and then having natural selection select the things that are better able to survive. And then this is what propelled the development of the biological world. Right around the 20th century, the beginning of the 20th century, Gregor Mendel, the monk, discovered genetics. And so this was added to it. That is, genetic mutations are the things that are the stuff that natural selection can work with in order to produce novelty in any individual and then move the evolutionary enterprise forward. Now, that genetic mutation and natural selection is called neo-Darwinism. Now, that's kind of basic fundamentalist Darwinism. There's other permutations and different kinds of definitions, but what everybody holds to now, the scientific establishment, is this basic idea that there are mutations that are unguided, that are selected by an unguided process called natural selection, which then produces something that was never intended by anyone. Now, that is the Darwinism that is accepted by everyone today. This is the scientific establishment's understanding of it. It's also called the blind watchmaker thesis it was a term coined by Richard Dawkins, who wrote a book by that name. So this is the kind of evolution that is the only kind of evolution that will satisfy the scientific establishment. And so my concern here is, if you're talking about theistic evolution, and what you mean by theistic evolution is the blind watchmaker thesis of natural selection working on mutations, or neo-Darwinism, the question then becomes, can that understanding of evolution be made consistent with theism? And in particular here, since we're evangelicals, we are talking about Orthodox, classical Christianity, evangelical Christianity. That's where you're going to run into a problem, it seems to me. Note, by the way, in my defining evolution this way, and people define it different ways, common descent, universal common descent, simply natural selection, change over time, all of those might be definitions in play, but keep in mind that those are not the definitions that are going to do the job that these new theistic evolutionists want to do, and that is impress the scientific establishment. Anything less than the blind watchmaker thesis is not going to do for them. So the question is, can we accept the blind watchmaker thesis of neo-Darwinism and hold on in a meaningful way to classical Christianity?
How, I mean, just give us a few examples. How integrated is this notion of unguidedness, lack of intention in the mindset of the neo-Darwinist?
Let me just give you a few citations, and these are from major movers in the scientific realm in the neo-Darwinian synthesis. Ernst Mayr: natural selection is so important for the Darwinian because it permits the explanation of adaptation by natural means instead of by divine intervention. Stephen Jay Gould, late of Harvard: no vital forces propel evolutionary change, and whatever we think of God, his existence is not manifest in the products of nature. George Gaylord Simpson: mankind is a result of a purposeless natural process that did not have him in mind. Now, if these notables are taken seriously, and quotes like these are legion, Todd, even Darwin understood his own theory this way, then Darwinism can't easily be baptized. Indeed, the world's foremost popular apologist for evolution, Richard Dawkins, famously remarked that Darwin made it possible to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist. William Provine over at Cornell said, evolution is the greatest change of atheism ever invented, engine of atheism ever invented. So these guys are not nobodies in the discussion. These are the main players in the discussion on the neo-Darwinian synthesis side. They all understand Darwinism to be completely non-directed. And in fact, gosh, the fact that in the minds of many people, evolution has been so successful has been something that has commended atheism to them and caused them to go away from Christianity. How is it if these atheists are so excited about the prospects of evolution promoting atheism that Christians now think if we accept their entire point of view, except for their materialism in the background, but the biological explanation, why would that commend Christianity to any of these people who thinks it teaches atheism?
So the term here, atheist, that we're using, you're not using this as a pejorative, as it often is, atheistic evolution, to kind of make the point that this is simply a description of what their theory actually says and excludes. It does not see not only the necessity, it sees as entirely superfluous a God.
Right. Richard Dawkins starts his famous book, the Blind Watchmaker, with a statement: the biological realm is a complex realm that gives the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. But then he goes on to explain that, of course, this is appearances are deceiving, and it's the blind watchmaker of natural selection. So I'm not doing any name calling here. I'm just simply making the point that the establishment's understanding of evolution is that it occurs completely without the help of any divine force. And if you try to insert God in any meaningful place in the activity, say, for example, you say, well, God is directing the mutations, or God is somehow directing how natural selection works, well, then you're no longer talking about evolution in the Darwinian sense, because a natural selection that is guided and not unguided, or a mutation that is guided and not unguided, is not Darwinian evolution. It's intelligent design. And, of course, they want nothing to do with intelligent design. So the question needs to be asked, if you're going to talk about theistic evolution, and the evolution you mean is the blind watchmaker's thesis, and the theism that you mean is classical Christianity, you have to answer the question, what is it that God actually did if he so-called used evolution? And that's the question I'd like to hear answered from people who hold to theistic evolution.
Before we go on to that question and deal with it a little bit, let's talk with Marla, who's listening in Massachusetts. Hi, Marla. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Thank you. I went to school many years ago for an anthropology degree, and I had to take physical anthropology, which is a study of evolution. And I would challenge constantly the different professors I had. One of the things was I asked, well, how did we get eyesight? I mean, it's very complex. I mean, if there's one thing wrong with your eyesight, you have some, if you can't see this way or whatever, so it has to be perfect. And they would say, oh, it's a light-sensitive patch on an, whatever, an animal or something. And that, I said, well, how did that make it want to survive? And they said, well, it would, it could sense things and get out of the way. I mean, it's all very ambiguous and shadowy, their terminology.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I found it interesting that they always said, so the giraffe needed to get the higher leaves. And the next statement would be, that they don't say, is, so it grew a neck, you know. And the other thing is, they told me that all mutations are not viable. So I said, you'd have to have 3 million of these light-sensitive patched things at the same time, in the same location, basically, all reproducing with each other to actually have a, if they're viable, to have something with which to go forward, to move forward. Uh-huh. But none of it made any sense, and I just was flummoxed by that they were trying to push this off as factual. And they got very angry with me every time I asked a question, and they almost always sent me to another professor. So I would ask a question about this, and they'd say, well, we can't answer that in this class, but if you go to so-and-so, he can answer it.
Marla, thank you very much, and thanks for listening in Massachusetts. Yeah. Your thoughts there, Greg?
Marla's making a couple of really good points. First of all, she's pointing to the problem of what is called irreducible complexity. You take eyesight, for example. It has so many different things that have to be working together in a very sophisticated way before the eye can really serve to function to improve survival. And it's not just the eyeball itself. It's stuff in the brain. It's optic nerve. It's muscles. It's liquids. It's blinking. It's eyelids. It's eyelashes. It's all kinds of stuff. And when one presses an evolutionist on this particular point, what they will do frequently is what they did with Marla, and that is to tell a story. Well, this happened, and then this happened, and first it's an eye sense, it's light sensitive, and that helped those with light sensitive patches to survive a little better, and then that light sensitivity changed a little bit, and they do these incremental changes that all were a little bit better, a little bit better, and so that moved evolution forward. Of course, the problem is that the eye is not the kind of thing, nor many things in biological organisms, the kind of things that can just get a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better to increase survivability. They are complex things that have to work together all at once before you're going to get the benefit for survival. So she's identifying a serious problem with the issue of Darwinian evolution itself. Let me make a point here, an observation, though. In my piece, Drifting Towards Darwinism, I am not arguing against Darwinian evolution in the piece, though I don't think it happened. I think it fails on the merits, and her points are some of the examples of the kinds of points that I would make about the problems with Darwinism. I am simply asking the question, given what Darwinism, held by the scientific establishment, believes, is it possible to accept that and make that work with Christianity? That's the only issue that I've addressed in this piece.
All right, when we come back, we'll take up the term theism. What does it mean? And then, can it go together with what evolution means? Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently.
Now, there are four levels of giving. The confessor, $25 monthly or an annual gift of $250. The apologist, $50 monthly or an annual gift of $500. The reformer, $100 monthly or an annual gift of $1,000. And the patron, $200 monthly or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Stephen Hine on the Consortium on Classical and Lutheran Education Conference, July 16th through the 18th in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
The Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education wishes to invite all Issues Etc. listeners to its 13th annual conference hosted by Concordia Theological Seminary this July 16th through the 18th. For the first time, we will be featuring three-day intensive in-service opportunities in such areas as teaching Latin, classroom design and management, Christian and non-Christian worldviews, classical Lutheran pedagogy. Please join us for our best conference yet.
You can find out more about the Consortium on Classical and Lutheran Education Conference, July 16th through the 18th in Fort Wayne, Indiana, at clcc.org. clcc.org.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking about theistic evolution with Greg Kokel. He's founder and president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, author of the book Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Convictions. He's also written an article for the latest Solid Ground newsletter, Drifting Toward Darwinism. You'll find a link to Stand to Reason at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand, and to his book, Tactics, there as well. issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. All right, we did the term evolution. Let's talk about the term theism.
Yeah, well, if you think about Christian theism, I mean, our story starts this way. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then what follows in the next three chapters is some kind of characterization of the details of how that happened. Now, Genesis is a book of beginnings. It's the beginning of the world. It's the beginning of mankind. It's the beginning of a problem that the rest of the Bible, all other 65 books, and most of the book of Genesis, too, is meant to show, to solve. It tells how God solved that problem, how he repaired the breach. Now, however someone understands the beginning chapters of the narrative, and I think there's flexibility, especially in chapter one, some details seem theologically inescapable. First, God made everything, all right? Second, God deliberately organized everything in a very particular way. He made the raw materials, and then, however, he made particular things from the raw materials, say Adam, for example. And third, though all humans are biologically diverse to some degree, there are certain non-biological things that remain the same for everyone. We bear God's image, and we also share equally in the guilt resulting from the original couple's freely chosen rebellion against God, which corrupted their original moral purity. So I'm just talking about standard Christian theology. All human beings are both transcendently valuable and they're morally guilty. As a group, and here's what's key to this qualification, in virtue of their common descent from their first parents. Now, it strikes me that that's an absolute bare minimum initial Christian theology. There's more to add to it, but you can't sacrifice what I've just said and still have classical Christianity. Now, the question I ask then, and this is where I think all that I've just said, every classical Christian, every Orthodox small-o Christian, certainly every evangelical Christian, is going to have to affirm those things. So how can that story, bare minimum in the Scripture, be made to fit the Darwinian story? That's where the big problem comes in, because we're not just Christian writ broad.
we care about very particular things. We're just not people that go to church or have been raised in a Christian family. We have a doctrinal statement that is central to our entire message of redemption. There are certain sine qua nons, that is, essential pieces to that message, which includes man in the image of God, man fallen, man needing redemption, and all men needing redemption because they all come from the same fallen couple. Now, how do you make sense of the entire redemptive story of the Bible if the Darwinian model, as characteristically offered, is true? You're going to have a problem answering the question, what did God do anyway? And I do talk about that in the article, but the more serious problems are the theological ones, because it seems that certain features of Christian orthodoxy, Todd, are impossible to reconcile with the Darwinian model. And, for example, if Adam and Eve might not have been our first parents, well, what then? How do we make sense of the entire narrative of Scripture, the salvation history, if that wasn't the case? That's a huge problem.
Is there also a problem, that is the central problem, I agree with you completely, is there also a problem with why you need God after all? I mean, what good is God in the system of theistic evolution if evolution would have, I think as you state, according to Darwinian evolution, would have produced the same results anyway without God?
Well, I think if you're asking what good is God in the mechanism of the development of life, then I think you have a more difficult question to answer. Some people have said, well, maybe God's monkeying with the details, but of course, if he's doing that as the process is going on, then it's not Darwinism, it's intelligent design. Well, some have suggested maybe God front-loaded all the information at the initial conditions of the Big Bang, and then all of that kind of played itself out, or maybe there's some mechanism that God has made to create information, and so he kind of front-loads the whole enterprise, but he's not involved with the process that proceeds naturalistically. The problem, Todd, for that is that there's no evidence that all of this information was front-loaded in the initial conditions, and there is no chemical necessity, there is no chemical law, if you will, that can produce the massive amounts of information that need to be infused into the biological genome in order for there to be all this biological diversity. I mean, there's tons, to say tons is an understatement, there's a massive amount of information in genetic code that has to come from somewhere. It wasn't there in the beginning. It is there now. Where did all this writing come from? And so if you follow the Darwinian model, they want to say, well, this is genetic mutation, but that is certainly not adequate to provide all the information that's needed. This is a serious problem. If you're a Christian, a theistic evolutionist, well, you could say God wrote it, but where and when? And I think your point is a good one then. It doesn't seem, God does seem to be superfluous to the process. He's kind of like a leprechaun, you know, that you just invoke. But you don't need to invoke him, because even if you didn't have the leprechaun, you'd still get the results that natural processes can produce.
So someone, the term that you quote from Calvin College's Howard Van Til,
right?
He, and it's very pious sounding, a fully gifted creation.
Uh-huh.
Is another example of this kind of, well, God is necessary in that he front-loaded the information that would later be expressed through the completely and utterly unguided natural process of natural selection.
Yes, well, what he would say is he would say the guidance is in the initial conditions. If you set up the initial conditions right, it's kind of like setting up a massive thing of dominoes. You set them up just right and you kick one over, they'll all fall naturally. To make a big map of the United States or something like that. So there's a design product that comes. But in order to, and that's what he means by fully gifted, everything's there right in the beginning. But you've got to be able to demonstrate that it was there right in the beginning, first off. And there's no evidence that it was. A little side curiosity, by the way, you might know this, Todd, is that Professor Van Til is no longer at Calvin College, and he's retired. But once he retired, he abandoned his Christianity. And he remains committed to the Darwinian model, but he has fully abandoned Christianity. He's no longer a believer. He's considered himself a free thinker now. And this is part of my concern, that when you start with a dogmatic commitment to the Darwinian model, then something has got to budge, because it's not going to fit with classical Christianity. And what ends up budging is classical Christianity. You whittle away, you whittle away, you whittle away. Pretty soon there's nothing there, and then you walk away.
What about this one? And this is the one that I think I've probably encountered more often than not. Kind of just consign it to mystery. God's in that process somehow, but we, since we weren't there, we can't say how. We just got to take the evidence of Darwinian evolution and then hold fast to our idea that God was around there doing something, but we will not say what.
And this strikes me as a huge kind of leap of faith statement. We have no evidence that God is involved in this, but the Bible tells me so, so I'm just going to kind of invoke him as a mysterious force because there's no evidence of his fingerprints there. It's all a naturalistic process. The problem is you're kind of, oddly, you run up against Richard Dawkins, who himself says the biological world is a complex world that gives the appearance of having been designed for a purpose. Even the atheist knows that the universe looks designed, but he's going to say that's misleading. So, you know, that you've got this odd situation that somebody taking that position is running up against the clear statements of the atheist, for goodness sake, insofar as he's telling us what the circumstance looks like. It looks designed. No, I think God's fingerprints are everywhere, and there's no reason to go with the Darwinian model just to save face with the scientific community because the Darwinian model is false. Now, again, that's a separate issue. But I am not tempted at this unlikely marriage because I don't think that the Darwinian model is supported on the merits of the scientific evidence itself. And there's lots that's been written about that. Regardless of what people think about that, I think we have to be honest and simply say that the blind watchmaker thesis and classical Christianity are separate animals. They are just separate animals, and you can't marry them together. They just won't work.
Greg Kokel is founder and president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California. He's author of the book Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Convictions. He's also written an article in the latest Solid Ground newsletter, Drifting Toward Darwinism. Greg, thank you very much for being our guest.
It's great talking with you again, Todd. Thanks.
I know that many of our listeners really love the apologetic angle that we take here on Issues Etc. with great guests like Greg Kokel. We've got a lineup for this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference that is apologetic in its bent. It's not only apologetic, but it seeks to make the case in several different areas. Chris Roseborough making the case against postmodernism in the church. Pastor Will Whitten making the case for classical Christian worship. Rod Rosenblatt making the case for Christ alone and making the case against pietism. Alvin Schmidt will be there making the case against Islam. I'll be there making the case for confessional Christianity. It's all together Friday, June the 14th, Saturday, June the 15th, here in Collinsville, Illinois, at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. We already have listeners registered, and they're coming from Florida, from West Virginia, from Pennsylvania, from Ohio, from Michigan, and from Minnesota. So it's time for you to go and sign up for the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. It's $100 per person. You can sign up at our website, issuesetc.org. Issuesetc.org. Look for the logo of the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June the 14th and Saturday, June the 15th, right here in Collinsville, Illinois. And we hope to see you there. When we come back, it's hour two of Issues Etc. We're going to spend that hour concluding our four-part series on the office and responsibilities of your pastor today, his responsibility to study Scripture and the Lutheran Confessions and to pray. We'll talk about all of that with Pastor Peter Bender in hour two of Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among his people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.
Martin Luther taught that the chief function of music and worship was the proclamation of the Word of God. With Heirs of the Reformation, Treasures of the Singing Church, you will hear over two centuries of Lutheran musical theology, beautifully performed and faithfully sung. For a limited time, save 10% on this 4-CD set when you use promotional code URA. Simply visit cph.org today. Lutheran thought, Lutheran substance, Lutheran music. Brought to you by Concordia Publishing House.